Claude can also do the hosting now. Like, you can literally just say, like, host it, you know? And then it will go do that, you know? I did that for the Zero Trust World thing. All right, y'all, we've talked about threat locker ring fencing a lot. We know how it allows you to set ACLs and policies for exactly what an application is allowed to do in your network. But today I'm gonna tell you how it does that, okay? Three technologies: mini filter drivers, window filtering platform, and EX version kernel notification routines. Mini filter drivers are essentially a hook or callback for IO requests, okay? So when you're trying to write or read from a file, you can create a hook with those and approve or deny based off of the threat locker ACL. Windows filtering platform, similar situation, but for connect bind requests, right? You can say, okay, hey, is this process allowed to talk to port 443 over there on the internet? Yes or no? Approve or deny. Lastly, you've got EX version kernel notification routines. The EX version is important because it allows you to approve or deny versus just getting a notification from the kernel. And this is specific for hooking various native API calls like NT create user process, which is what you would use to like spin up PowerShell.exe or something like that. Okay, so those three are very useful to threat lockers, ring fencing, core technology. Hope you enjoyed learning how this is implemented. Check out Threat Locker if you think your work could benefit from something like that. All right, let's go back to the show. All right, dude. So I actually have a confession to make. So you remember? Don't me like that. So you remember on the pod a couple months ago when I said I'll never give a talk ever again?
Yes.
So I accidentally gave
a talk. You already did it.
Gave a talk at Zero Trust World. And it was so much fun, dude. Oh my gosh, it was great. And like, obviously, ThreatLocker is great. They sponsor the pod. They're really instrumental to what we do here on the pod. But that conference is freaking great, man.
Is it their conference?
It is massive. Yeah. And, okay, cool. And my talk, can I brag on it for just a second?
Yeah, of course.
Like, I was so pleased because I roll up there and I like, you know, get everything set up, and then the people start coming in and they gave laptops to every participant too at the workshops. Like, the laptops were sitting in the seats, you know, that were there for them to use. So you don't take them home, but like, you know, they prepared them for you in advance. Yeah. They imaged them and everything. So anyway, all of the seats fill up, and then there's still a long line of people. And then they come up, the ThreatLocker team comes up and they're like, hey, Justin, sorry to do this to you, but the line is like around the corner still. We need to put you in this bigger room. So like last minute before the talk starts, we move like 400 people to this next room, you know, and then that room fills up and there's people standing in the back. And the turnout was awesome. And the crowd was so engaged, man. They were like doing the labs we had more than half of the people, you know, raise their hand saying, I finished the lab, you know. Wow. Which was sick.
What was the lab?
So the lab was, and this is where, I'm sorry, thank you for bringing me back around there.
Yeah,
this
I had no
is
idea.
Where all of this comes back to, which was the reason I didn't want to do talks is because I freaking hate prepping slides.
Yeah, you don't want to prep, right?
But just like you said, all you do is you write an outline in a .md file, and then you just give it to Claude Code, and it just builds a website for you with all of your slides on it.
Yep.
And that is the best for us as hackers, because not only is like, are you dealing with HTML rather than like drag this element here, or, you know, that sort of thing. But you also can just build the labs and like the interactive workshop directly into the slides.
Oh, that's dope.
It's awesome, dude. It's freaking awesome. And it was so fun to present. No issues. You know, you just drop it on a VPS.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, more or less static. So it's like, okay, you know, 500 people brute forcing on it at the same time is not going to cause a problem or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Dude, that's awesome.
I'm back. Yeah, I do kind of like giving talks. I love giving talks, and the slide prep is not that bad anymore. So I'm very pleased.
Okay. I do have to give you a hard time though. Did I see something that said you signed some stickers?
Okay. Yes,
okay,
I did.
Okay, famous Justin.
Okay,
people are
going to
collect your sign stickers.
Listen, man. Listen, that was shout out to Everett, head of partnerships. He's like, hey, man, I'm going to buy this Sharpie that we need to sign the stickers. And actually, people really liked that, though. So after the talk, you know, they were like, we gave out a couple signed stickers with codes, you know, to get free swag for CTBB on them. And then people were coming up afterwards like, hey, can you sign the sticker? Can you sign the sticker? And I'm like, okay, you know, and so I don't know.
That's cool. No, I actually really like my, I think Network Chuck for you and I both like wrote like DC the date last year when he gave us like Network Chuck stickers. And that's like that one of my favorite stickers on my laptop. Yeah. I will say it is kind of wearing off. So we need another one, Chuck, if you see this, but.
Yeah, yeah, the silver Sharpie is the way to go, apparently, according to Everett. So, yeah, really great conference. I'm definitely going to go back next year. I thought it was a blast, and the venue was really good. ThreatLocker killed it on how they put it on. And so I'm going to go back. And I really like that it has aspects of, like, there's definitely some more, like, corporate cybersecurity stuff there. But then there's also, like, literally hands on the keyboard, hacking stuff.
Yeah, operators.
Labs as well, right? Yeah. So I think it's like a good like CISO and technical, you know, conference, which I think is pretty rare. It's one or the other typically.
That's dope. Also, by the way, if you hear like hammering or tile cutting, we have contractors upstairs, so.
Dude, I also have contractors upstairs right now. That's funny. Richard, try your best with this episode, man.
Yeah, I'm going to try to mute between stuff, but we'll see.
Yeah. All right. We got a couple things. Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a lot of time. So let's jump through it. You're up first.
Okay, sweet. A lot of this episode, don't let it scare you away. I think it'll be really interesting. You know, obviously I've often been talking about hacking AI, but this is going to be about using AI to hack. Not the whole episode, but a lot of my content is. And I'm doing that honestly because it feels like it's in the zeitgeist, which if people don't know what that means, it's like that's what's in the culture right now. Like if you're on X, everyone's just like blowing up talking about using AI to hack, and there's like overreactions and there's bad takes and there's like good takes. And so anyways, a bunch of the things that I'm going to mention are like relevant to that. Our boy Sweetly or Sweet Lie, however you want to pronounce it, updated BB Scope. He has like a website and like he updated the open source code. So if you don't want to use the website, you can just like spin up your own instance of it. But I've always loved this. Where I'm kind of like a recon guy and love big fuzzing, I've always loved BB Scope to just like dump all of the scope for like, because you know, there are things like, is it Aditya's like targets BB Scope something GitHub that's like useful for all the public programs. But if you want all of your privates, which is really, you know, where often things are more likely to be found, you can use BB Scope to dump that. And the like HackerOne a while back added like an API key. So you're not using something sketchy where you're like pasting in your cookies and all that. Anyways, he has a big new upgrade. And I think you shared with me a link right before this, which we'll drop it in the show notes, that there was a pull request. Like he released this like a couple of days ago. And then as of like today, there's no pull request that allows you to actually just dump your reports, which can be really useful. Now there is some drama around that. Also, if you want to get into that about whether you should give your reports.
Dude, I don't know. I think it's good. I think exactly what you did and what Corbin did as well, where you dump your reports and you say, Claude, go build yourself a set of skills to implement the techniques that are referenced in this report. I think that is really, really good idea. I haven't done it yet personally, but.
Tommy's big pushback against that is that we don't have the right to share it with third parties. So Tommy was going at me on X, our last guest, which by the way, if you haven't seen that episode, it's awesome. Go check it out. But Tommy is obviously, due to his past, a very by the book person these days, right? Like he is very much by the book. And I, you know, my personal belief is that if you've got, you know, if you've set it in the settings for major model providers that you trust, like Google, OpenAI, Anthropic, that they can't train on your data, I don't think there's any risk with like importing your reports to Claude Code or Codex, whatever, to have it try to bypass or to find adjacent bugs to that or to build skills. If we get some sort of top-down direction that we shouldn't do that, then maybe it's a different discussion. But anyways, that's the drama around that part.
Yeah, dude, I think that we put these HTTP requests into Kaito, you know, we put these requests into Burp, you know, like there are, obviously it's different when it's going up to the cloud or whatever, but like they're hosting stuff in AWS, right? You know, HackerOne is, right? So there's third parties going to be involved in here.
Right. And as long as there's some legal protection there around, like, you know, they're not allowed to train on it. And I just don't think that there's any chance that they're going to be going through the, you know, tens of trillions of tokens to go find like my report, you know, like it just it seems totally, silly.
Right.
Yeah.
Like get your head out of the freaking, like I'm the main character vibe here. Like no one gives a shit about your bug bounty reports. Like it's exactly like if you've got some crazy, like 0 day on Android, you know, then okay, maybe you need to be careful, you know, like a, like the, one of those $2.5 million chains.
If you have a Pegasus, if you have a Pegasus exploit, like maybe be careful.
Yeah. But like, really, if you're not in possession of something like that, you, no one gives a shit, dude, like about you, you know, like,
and I really,
and I'm saying that as a higher profile individual, like no one gives a shit about me. Like it's
yeah. And I think what Alex said was really eye opening too, that we do actually retain full IP to our reports. And so in some ways I think we do have, you know, some types of, rights. I don't know exactly, you know, where all those boundaries are, but I think that it is at the end of the day, still our IP. It is oftentimes the company's IP also for their use, but it still is also ours. So.
Dude, I actually just logged into Claude AI /settings/data-privacy-controls and turned off those little little things. I haven't done that yet, so I'm glad you reminded me to do that. If you guys haven't done that, you could just log into Claude.ai, go to your settings, go to the privacy tab, and turn those off.
Yeah, and maybe do that for each of your subs if you have multiple.
Exactly. Who knows if you have multiple. You certainly don't have multiple, Joseph.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've never mentioned that. No, actually, I have three. Yes. Three right now, but I'm hoping to keep scaling up, so.
I feel like you're not allowed to say that, bro.
Okay. Never mind. I don't have that many.
Anthropic is like, I'm sorry, what'd you say? Yeah. So, all right, man. Well, that's good. I actually, as our next topic, just wanted to give a shout out to our boy, Matt Brown, who recently announced that he was going full time and, you know, pulled the trigger. Did
long overdue.
Job. Yeah. Is a full time, you know, pen test, content creator, bug bounty hunter. That sort of thing. So if you guys haven't seen his channel, you're definitely going to want to go check it out. We'll link it in the description. He's nmatt0 on Twitter. And yeah, his content is just the best content out there around for IoT device hacking, in my opinion.
Yeah. And you know, I think that this is very resilient and important. Like, obviously, I think for being resilient in bug bounty, I think that you can look at games, look at desktop apps. You know, there are things you can do to stay more resilient as like AI stuff kind of picks up. But I think going into hardware hacking is one of the smartest plays you can do if you have the time and the bandwidth to do it. And his YouTube channel is gold. Like, it's just the best at hardware hacking on YouTube. And so, and he's one of the boys, you know, he's been around the life hacking event scene. He's really cool. We got to support our friends. So.
Yeah. And I will say one of the things he announced in his video was that he is also doing training stuff by mass request. So he has two courses out there right now, Digital Signal Analysis for Hardware Hackers and Beginner's Guide to IoT and Hardware Hacking. And guys, these are grossly, grossly underpriced. These are like $200 and $50.
Oh, gosh.
So... yeah, I got to hit up my boy and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely go check those out. We're going to give away a couple subscriptions to this Critical Thinkers tier on Discord as a way to support Matt as he starts his endeavors here. But definitely a good place to get started with for hardware hacking if that's the route you want to go.
Yeah, and if you have any hardware stuff or want any type of pen test, like he does contract pen test. So if you're a company, definitely reach out to Matt.
Yeah. All right, what you got next?
The second thing is probably short, so you might have me skip it, but original SickSec on X, I feel like people have maybe seen that before. Are you going to share or you want me to share?
No, go for it, man.
Oh, man, I'm logged in. Anyways.
Oh, share your screen?
Yeah, it's fine. I'll either let you share or people can look it up themselves. Anyways.
I got you.
Another bug bounty hunter who built a MCP style client for accessing and listing your reports and stuff. Honestly, I was going to share this before Sweetly upgraded his BB Scope. I'd rather have it all in one tool, so I'll probably just use BB Scope. But if anybody wants to use like a MCP for HackerOne to search your reports and that sort of thing, that's a good one to do. Okay. So my main thing, and this is like, actually, I'm gonna let you go first. I'll let that be my second small one. You go first because the rest of mine are all kind of around the same topic.
Okay.
So yeah, and that'll be like a bigger discussion.
Yeah, sure. I got you. So the next item that I had to share on the list was I've just been having a lot of success lately on Google with protobuf related stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously there's like this proto-JSON stuff that they're doing where, you know, they're removing the fields. It's kind of like protobuf, but in JSON format. That is a necessity. You've got to know how to deal with that if you're going to hack on Google at all. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the actual protobuf stuff. Like, there are a lot of parameters that are base64 encoded, like, you know, binary protocol protobuf stuff. And I think a lot of people just get scared of it and assume it's signed or, you know, just don't mess with it. And I've been messing with it and it's been giving me some good stuff. So I built a little Kaito convert workflow, which I'll drop in the Discord, that allows you to just inline inside of Kaito, decrypt those, or I shouldn't say decrypt, decode those protobuf basic C4 encoded strings.
Okay.
And then you can just kind of look at them. They're not going to have the key values, right? That's the sad thing about protobuf is just has the value. Mm-hmm. But you can look at the value and kind of extrapolate what's going on there. And so you'll see nested protobuf, so protobuf inside of protobuf. And you know, I'm not going to lie, it does get to be a little bit of a pain, but if you decode all of that stuff and you look deep into it, you'll find IDs, you'll find, you know, strings that you see get manifested in the UI. And those things have some really, really crazy impact once you start understanding it.
Yeah, so it actually unlocks the ability to hack stuff that you kind of weren't able to even test before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did want to give just a really quick explanation of how protobuf stuff works here. They've got a bunch of different features of protobuf. But one of the things that I wanted to mention was that there are, you know, length delimited strings, right? So you can say, okay, I've got the string, it's this length, and it's, you know, sort of standard binary protocol like that. But they also encode the wire type, a field number, and continuation flag inside of it. And that's kind of what the, you know, single 8 bits represents there. So I'll explain very briefly. The first 3 bits are the wire type. So this is like, oh, you've got a var int, you've got a string, you've got a fixed integer size. That's going to be encoded in those first 3 bits. In the next 4 bits, you've got the actual field number that is associated with this content. So if you have the protobuf representation, you can map, you know, the key names back to the values.
Yeah.
But if not, you're just going to get the field number mm-hmm. that is associated with this specific value, right? And that takes, that's 4 bits. The last bit is the continuation bit, which allows you to continue expanding that metadata. And then you've got your actual data representation. So it's a little bit complex, but once you kind of wrap your head around it, it's not too bad. You got to familiarize yourself with the different variable types and stuff like that. And all of that gets extracted away by this Kaito convert workflow that I use and just allows me to say, okay, you know, field 1 maps to this string, field 2 maps to this integer, that sort of thing. And if you just have even that rudimentary level understanding of it, then you can really pop some cool bugs. If you can reverse it, you know, write takelog code and say, hey, write me something that reverses this. And then you can inject into those various fields. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Yeah, and Claude is so good at it, man. Time you hand it a buffer, it's like, oh yeah, of course, the protobuf, here's the Python script to, and I'm like, thank you.
Yeah, and that wasn't true a year ago.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, so yeah. I've got a lot to say on that, but on the topic of Kaito, and I'm wearing the Kaito shirt today, and Claude Code, we released, me and Justin are advisors, but Kaito released a Kaito skill for Claude Code or Codex or whatever to plug into. It's at github.com/Kaito/skills, but there's also a blog that's getting posted today, and I'm posting a blog post about it as well, kind of addressing some of the elephants in the room. But yeah, actually, do you know, can that skill yet? It probably cannot, because workflows are kind of complex. It can't edit workflows yet.
I don't think so, but that is something we definitely want to build on the fly, is like, hey, letting it hook in there and say, hey, build me a workflow to decrypt this protobuf.
Yep.
Like, oh my gosh.
Or implement this workflow that Justin made, like, you know, install it for me in Kaito. But
I will say though, going back to my protobuf thing, because it is sort of relevant to that. Like, if you do get Claude to analyze these protobuf strings, and I'll just say it straight as I can here, this is a really good area for you guys to use AI to find bugs that were not really as accessible a year ago without AI, right? Because Claude is very good at understanding these protobuf structures. So you give it this string and it can easily create you a program to reverse those and you know, re-encode them in the right format, right? They do sometimes have checksums for those in Google's architecture inside of those protobufs. But dude, Claude is like a very high hit rate of like, being able to just look at it and be like, oh yeah, that clearly is the checksum for this. So I'll just calculate that based off of the, and I'm like, whoa, okay. So definitely a good area to use those. And like you were saying, if we can get AI to be able to build workflows very easily inside of Kaito, I think that'll be a big level up too. So maybe I'll try to add that to the skill within the next couple of weeks before this airs.
Yeah, it already has a ton of functionality. So Emil and Jan added some really cool SDKs that are now plugged into that skill. So it can like add findings, edit requests, search HTTP history, like add match replace stuff. I really want them to, and I think in the next release they're going to add it, be able to mess with the sitemap tree, because I think it'd be really cool to like have some sort of like coverage map where you and because they're adding plug-in to plug-in. Wow, what's that called?
Conversation.
Yeah. Well, no, not compatibility. Anyways, the ability for plugins to communicate. Communication is the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
And I think having like a sitemap coverage tree would be so cool, where it like it puts the sitemap into like a plugin, and then it like marks them all red, and then like as you and Claude Code like add them to replay and test things, it like turns them all green, and so you can be like, oh, I've definitively tested all this. It makes me think of a long time ago. I heard that like Space Raccoon used to do that. Like especially when he first got started, he would basically list out every API endpoint and like every query, and then like all the bug class he likes to check for. And he would have like a coverage map in Google Sheets, and he would just test every single thing. And then you would end up finding a bunch of bugs that way, because he was way more thorough than anyone else. Right.
That jerk, man. You know, the same thing that Ronchon did that really like messed with me was like, he's like, oh yeah, you need to be so thorough. You need to like test every field. In every value for every field of every endpoint of every mutation of every freaking, I'm like, dude, like stop, you know? And I don't know. I'm still so jaded from this one live hacking event where I spent like an hour on this one, you know, trying to exploit this one endpoint, and he popped in and got arbitrary ATO on like GitHub or something, or no, on GitLab.
Yeah.
And this is before he worked with them.
And it was because you missed like a single key, right?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like one of the weird, you know, values of the GraphQL schema that like doesn't look like it's going to do anything. So you don't even really check it, but then it like completely bypasses the whole off scheme. It's like, but yeah.
Dude, thoroughness is important. On that exact same topic, because it's like just relevant to all of this, Claude Code, when hacking for me and XSS Doctor, basically found a high, or maybe it's a critical, on like a major company by looking at like the survey endpoints. Like that's just the stuff that I always ignore, you know, like this just stuff that's like feedback, submission, survey junk. Same thing with those headers that there was like that big finding on last year, like trace headers or something. It's like these things that like we get so used to as bug hunters, used to ignoring, that sometimes, you know, Claude or whatever we're using will end up testing. So,
dude, are you even hacking anymore, bro? Are you just like directing Claude? Like every time I hear you talking about it, you're just like directing Claude.
Yeah, I feel like my job is more triage and validation. Like over the last 6 weeks.
It's crazy.
I don't think that it in any way, I mean, I'm sure over time it will degrade skills, but in general, I find that it's like leveling up my heuristic for like where to look and what to look at. And it's also, it's just finding stuff that I would have not found, right? And so it's expanding my scope and my understanding of these applications, especially on big targets like Google. Like just the random gadgets and information it finds about architecturally about these targets levels up my understanding architecturally, where even if Claude Code were to go away, I now understand Google's infrastructure way better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is the plus. I will say that I have found myself becoming a little bit lazy, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like the other day, a buddy of mine found a CSS injection, and I was like, oh yeah, dude, I'll just use like my stuff to hack this. And I was like, oh man, I'm gonna have to like set up the font leak and the ligatures, and all right, let me go do it. And I started doing it. I was like, oh, I'll have Claude do it. And then I spent like 2 hours trying to get Claude to do it, and Claude couldn't do it.
You could have just done it.
No, I know. I could have just done it myself. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to like get Claude to do it. And then it like, you know, and then you run it for the first 5 minutes and it's like, oh, wow, it's doing everything. Like, this is going to be so fast. And then something's off, but you have no idea what, because you didn't do any of it, you know? And it's like, dang it. So I don't know. Sometimes you get big wins, but sometimes there's misses on that as well, I think.
Yeah. All right, dude. Here's the major topic. You got one more thing before I jump to this whole major topic?
Okay. Yeah, I do. Okay. So I wanted to mention as well, And I've mentioned this, I think, briefly on the pod before, but I've actually been finding a lot of permissions issues, client-side bugs recently. And I wanted to mention a chain that is pretty good that maybe people can use. So one of the vulns I found recently was a CSERF of sorts to start recording with the victim's mic. And then, you know, what would happen is if after a certain period of time, it would take whatever you said, transcribe it, and put it into their service, right?
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, well, if I go to the site and I click allow, you know, allow the site to always access my microphone or whatever, then this doesn't require any user interaction at all. You could, it can just start recording your microphone at any time. So what I did is I did a login CSERF to my own account.
Wow.
Then I, you know, audio record CSERFed the endpoint to start recording.
Sick.
And then after a certain period of time, it would, you know, cut the recording and then upload it to my account.
Right, it's in your account, yeah.
Right. So now I can just effectively spy on the user. And yeah, it's, I mean, it seems to hit pretty well. I've reported this a couple times now and you know, they care about this. I think it's a little bit of a flaw with the whole concept of like domain locked permissions, mm-hmm. because
it almost needs to be account locked, right?
It does. It needs to be account locked, right? Because if you know,
I'm gonna, it basically, bleep, this is like a really Richard cool gadget. Bleep it,
but like, you know, it is gonna be on my account. If it's on my account, I'm fine with it recording, right? But if somebody login CSERFs their own account, then I'm gonna, you know, now I'm just uploading data into somebody else's account, yeah, you know, and it's really like, cool. Oh, this is not good.
Well, I just love it because I think that taking a gadget like CSERF, like login CSERF, and turning it into something mm-hmm. impactful is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, and then there's also the concept that I've talked about before of like permission delegation down into iframes. Like whenever you're seeing an iframe that you can control, make sure you check the permissions, you know, the allow attribute on that to like know whether it's allowing like screen recording, mic recording, any of those things, and that whether those permissions are being delegated from the top level frame down into the iframe. And if it is, then you might be able to abuse those as a third party iframe inside mm-hmm. of a trusted top level page.
Right. Yeah. I remember you'd mentioned that. What's the name of that attribute again?
Yeah, I think it's like I'm going to go pull it up right now, but it's like the allow iframe permissions. Pull it up on MDN. Yeah. The allow property.
Yeah. We've talked about
the allow property of the HTML iframe element indicates the permissions policy specified for this iframe. So yeah, that's the one.
All right, dude. So in a private Discord that you and I are in, I've had lots of discussions. I had these same discussions back whenever AI was like getting a little bit better at coding and it was like getting better at image gen and video gen. You know, I was always like in there hyping it up as the hype man that I am. But I would get some pushback, you know, like, oh, I can definitely tell this is AI and that sort of thing. And it eventually kind of passed. You know, of course, you can still tell sometimes when things are AI, but it is getting harder. But anyways, now that discussion has now kind of moved into over the last like week or two, can AI hack things, right? And I'm sure if you're on X at all, you've probably seen all these discussions. People are blowing up tweets like, I found this with Claude Code and I found that with Claude Code. And it's brought out, in my opinion, a couple different like thoughts. And these are in my most recent blog post that I just put up on the site. But the thoughts that I often feel compelled to believe are things like, even my grandma could do it, right? And there was some like really cheesy AI slop about my grandma finding a bug, you know, not literally mine, but the person who was posting it. Sorry for hitting my mic. And I, you know, and I think that I am like, I tend to overestimate what other people can do, especially people who don't have our skill set for like our understanding for how we see bug bounty, how we see life, how mm-hmm. we see coding, how we sell C servers. And in fact, you know, in building like small AI apps for just like friends and family, when someone says thank you, I'm like, ah, don't worry about it. Claude did it. And my wife's like, mm-hmm. stop saying that. Like, sure, that's kind of true, but you know how to host a server. You know how to tell it what to do. You know, like how it should build it. And then when things don't work, you know how to fix it. Like you're basically leveraging all of your technical expertise to like actually make this possible. Right.
Okay. And so I kind of disagree with that though, dude. Like I totally agree with you, but like Claude can also do the hosting now. Like you can literally just say like, host it.
Yes.
You know, and then it will go do that. You know, I did that for the Zero Trust World thing.
Yes,
I
was like, but when you say host it, it's going to say like, where do you mean to host it? Right. And so like for somebody who's non-technical, it's going to say like, okay, well, do you have a virtual server anywhere? And when grandma says no, it's going to be like, okay, well, you need to go sign up on this website. Right. And then get me an API key. It's like, we know what API keys are. We know how to sign up for websites. We know. Yeah. And like that is a low barrier to entry. But what I'm trying to say here is I think that when I say, you know, kind of anyone can do it, I'm talking about like anyone with knowledge of APIs and servers and who has done some hacking, right? And at that point, I think I'm 1000% correct. But I don't think that like anyone can do it, right?
So yes, I agree. But I think the difference between you and I who are like spending like time deploying stuff, hacking things, you know, very technical in the weeds, right? And my friend Tobias, who is you know, business IT automation, you know, is what he loves to do. The gap between me and him just got a lot smaller.
A lot smaller.
Because because he can now say to Claude, okay, yeah, you need a VPS? I got you. Here's, you know, the IP address and I set the password to this. Log in. And then it just logs in and does it, right? You know, he can do that.
Yeah.
You know, and he can go grab an API key. And you know, if you get given an API key for DigitalOcean, it'll just get the domain, it'll grab the thing, you know, it can do all of that, right? So I don't know. On one hand, certainly that's true, but I think the gap for between him and us just got a lot smaller. And I also think it superpowers us, you know, to be able to do things like the gap between me and the person that invented Protobuf, you know, you know, there's tiers to this. And I think Claude helps, you know, take people that have a general knowledge of something and be able to actually implement it, which is really beautiful.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so, I think for anyone who is just like slightly further down, they can just keep asking like, okay, well, how do I do that? Okay, well, how do I do that? And when everybody's in that mindset, it really does level everyone up. But the other thing that kind of hit me was like, so let's say your buddy, your IT buddy spins up a VPS. He's using Claude Code. He's getting into bug bounty. He's like, okay, go find these bugs. All right. So now what's the next limiting factor? The next limiting factor is he doesn't know what is a false positive. And so this is another thing. This is another thing that actually Patrick pointed out to me. And it's, you know, cause I kind of hate the fact that like any salesperson right now could just go use Claude Code, make a hackbot, and then go like rip a bunch of local businesses off, like running his hackbot as like a pen test as a service and selling pen tests. Right. But I think that the difference, and obviously business owners can't differentiate this, but the real difference between that and what I'm doing or what you're doing is that we do know, right? When it says jackpot, critical finding, we're like, yeah, that's just a wild card course and it's not 20% exploitable.
20% chance it's actually valid. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I do think if you are building this and you're having those issues, the pro tip here is basically play whack-a-mole with those errors, right? As you run it over the next week, go back and look at the false positives and incorporate those back into the prompt. Like, hey, when you found this, it was a false positive because of this. When you found this, you said it was a critical. On my rating, that's more like a lower or medium. I still reported it, but like, you know, like basically play whack-a-mole with the issues it has and it will improve. And so I think that that's a good tip, but I do think that that's another place where our intelligence is baked in to what we just expect of others, but that they might not be able to actually have or do. Cause it often will even take me a while to fully grok and to fully validate some of these bugs. And it's because they're like weird ones, right? It's like, it's not using my knowledge. It has knowledge about stuff that I don't even understand. Right. And so then I have to go understand and figure that out.
Now we understand what it feels like to be a triager, you know, where they're that's like, true. Oh, we just got this report. Like, I don't, being a triager, I think is a really crazy skill, you know, like it you've got to be able to, you know, figure out the threat model, look at this person's attack vector that you've never heard of before, figure out if it's valid, you know, it's pretty cool. But yeah, I don't know, man. I think one of the areas I'm underusing Claude right now is like getting more customization and playing whack-a-mole, like you said. Like I'll often just really rely on like very few things that I have in my Claude MD file, a handful of skills, and then just spend most of the time actually just explaining to it
what to do. Okay, well, stop. Let me fix that for you. It's going to take like three lines, really. It makes a big difference. You just need to add to your Claude MD. Anytime I get frustrated or anytime I have to re-explain something to you that you did not understand, or anytime that you like try one command and it fails and you try another command and it fails and you try another command and it fails, add that to the applied learning section in your Claude MD. And it will literally grow. Like every time you use Claude, it improves. It's like a self-improving loop that will then level up your own local Claude that will make it much better. What?
Okay.
Are you mad you didn't do this? Do you disagree?
No, I don't know, man. I feel like, is it going to know what things I want to have it improve on? Like, I don't get frustrated with Claude. I don't say like, okay, listen here, you dummy. You know, like I tell it, hey, do this. And I try to, you know, I don't know.
Okay. Here's what I noticed when I'm using it. I'll say, hey, go pull up whatever that we were working on last week. Go find it. And what will it do? It'll run like 20 different bash commands. It'll try to find it in some places. It'll try to use this thing. It'll use too wide of a thing. It'll find too many files. It'll find too few, right? Ever since I added that thing that I just told you, now what it does, like once it's like had to try something and got a bunch of errors or not found what it's looking for, it will then update its information. It'll be like, you know, when Joseph asked me to look for session files in Claude, they're located in .claude/sessions, right? Now, the next time I ask it to search, it only searches once. And so it basically improves itself, which saves tokens and then like saves frustration, saves time.
Okay. All right. Fine. I'll give it a shot. I'll add it. All right. Okay. Before we close though, one of the things I did want to discuss was, I think there's this whole concept of like token FOMO right now, where people are like, oh, I should be really, really utilizing my Claude Max subscription to the absolute max. I think you're doing a great job of that. They integrated Claude RC, which is something that I was really looking forward to with like just being able to take your Claude session and, you know, resume it on your phone and give it instructions in the real time, but it doesn't support dangerously skip permissions, which is something that you essentially have to use if you're using Claude, because it's like, it's going to run 50 bash commands, you know, and you're like, I don't want to press yes every single time. Like, right. I want you to sit in this container that I've got you in and then do whatever the heck you want in my little container, you know? So I don't know, man, do you have any good solution to that? I was kind of disappointed by RC.
I just haven't needed it. I didn't need OpenClaw or RC, and it's specifically because I just deployed a Discord bot that creates a thread, and in that thread, it's the same thing as a Claude session. So I just have a private Discord server. What do you know about this?
It doesn't look as good though, right? Like,
oh, it looks great. Let me see if I can take a good screenshot and share it with you all. I want to do it very quickly, but okay, basically,
put it in the doc or something, because
I'll put it in the doc. But basically, what
you redact it?
Yeah, that's fine. What it looks like is. Have you ever even seen this? This is a little pro tip for the listeners too. Did you know that Discord has a diff code block type?
Ah.
Send me a message. Send me a message to Discord. Actually, everyone listen along in Discord. Do backtick, 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 diff. And then have some lines with a plus and some lines with a minus. The lines with a plus will be green. The lines with a minus will be red.
Oh, interesting. Wow. What the heck?
Dude, that's cool. It's beautiful. And you can just have it write that out. So I have mine write out all the tool calls, all the things. Let me see if I can show you.
You don't have to redact in real time. You can just put it in the doc and then we'll redact it afterwards. And
okay. Yeah. Well, when I show you what this looks like, you're going to be like, I need that. I'm going to put it in the doc. And yeah, we'll just put it. Yeah, that's true. We can just like do an overlay, or I can even find a better picture. Okay. I just put it in the doc. What do you think? This is what my threads look like.
Yeah, that looks pretty good, man.
Yeah, you can see exactly what it's running. And I even have it snip if it's too long. And I have it where I can like send audio messages in. So
what about Control O?
Control O. Oh, to show more. Yeah. I can't do Control O, but I do have things like you know how you can Control C if it's like going down a rabbit hole?
Yeah.
You just send in like a stop command, it stops it.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
and you just had it code up this bot for you?
Yeah, I had it code up this bot. I would maybe be willing to share it. I'll think about that. But either way, I mean, anyone.
There's plenty of solutions out there, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I will say, you have to write custom handlers for like each tool call type. So let me show you this in the doc. Basically, what I'm showing for the listeners only is that, you know how there's a to do write and like a to do read? So I have mine use emojis for like the to do write. So like right here, you can see it's already finished all the to do's at the top and it's working on the bottom one. And so it updates that as it goes and it writes that out.
Does it go back and update the message? Or does it write a new to-do list every time?
No, it's writing a new to-do list, yeah. But it doesn't matter because I'm just watching the bottom anyways. And at the top of these new threads, I have it give me the --resume. So if I need to go like jump on this on the VPS, I have a copy and pasteable command to jump straight into this session.
Mm-hmm.
What are you so skeptical for? This is great.
It's good.
I can just hack from my phone, basically like with continue. Oh yeah, sorry, I have that too. So if I do slash my Discord bot resume, I can paste in the resume. So this is basically like the RC continue or remote control from my local machine or from my VPS, and it will resume that session. So then I can walk away and keep going.
Wait, do you have this running on your local machine and on your VPS?
No, the bot doesn't actually have access to local. So okay, it's only VPS. You could do the same thing if you wanted to, but it would have to pick it up from local or SCP it or something. But
yeah. All right, man. I don't know. It's not good. The Claude interface, the Claude code interface on the phone is not good. It's bad, but it looks like how I want it to look.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it feels how I want it to feel, but like the implementation is really bad.
Here's the diffs, by the way, since we're about to end.
Yeah.
Here's like the type of diffs it writes whenever it's updating stuff for me.
Oh, wow. Dang. That's super gorgeous.
I know. It's actually easier on the eyes than the TUI.
Dang. Okay. All right. Maybe. That one I'll give you a maybe on. I will definitely go add to my Claude MD file, you know, the self-improvement loop thing. But
here's the thing about the Discord bot. You don't have to use it. Like, what it's really useful for is a lot of times on my VPS, like, let's say I'm out and about and, you know, somebody messages me as like, hey, here's this critical thing. Can you validate it real quick? I will then just like pull up my phone, pull up Discord, start a new session in that new thread and just be like, hey, validate this for me. Or I'll say like, hey, you know, my website went down. Can you check the logs real quick, check the errors. It's kind of like my DevOps engineer on speed dial in Discord where I'm already at anyways when I'm out and about, when I don't have my computer. And so I can both hack from remote or check on things via remote or download things. Or I can say like, host this for my friend at this path. And I can do all of that without my computer.
Yeah, but like, can you do that? Like, does it take images? Does it take voice recording and stuff like that? Because even with ClaudeBot, I had issues with that back in the day.
Yeah, no.
Day being like 3 weeks ago when ClaudeBot got popular.
No, mine does accept attachments, and it does accept voice. I don't have it accepting images, but I mean, it would be mostly trivial to use. I just never have to give it images, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, man. We'll see. We'll give it a shot. I feel like this episode was like a bunch of us talking about Claude, but the world is really changing, man. The way that it works with bug bounty stuff right now, I think.
Yeah, actually, let me respond to that with the, like, even though we're going over by like 1 minute here, I do have to go pick up my daughter. But I think that people who are annoyed by us talking about AI or AI hacking, like, they're just missing out, or they're just being like grumpy about it, because. Like, even if you're only going to use it to just write code for you to like reproduce something, or even if you're only going to use it to host a POC, like, you're silly to not use it for some things like that, right? Or even if you're only going to use it for reversing RPC, like, you don't have to use it as your full-blown hackbot if you don't want to. Like, I know Bus Factor, he like just really wants to be human in the loop with it, right? But it found him a high on a program that pays $8,000 for highs last night. And before that, he was kind of like skeptical. I didn't really like it. It was kind of just like piecing it together or copying and pasting from chatbots. And now I think he's probably going to be hooked, because that one bug will pay for his usage for 3 years, right? And and there's no doubt it's going to get better. So that's one thing I didn't get to mention was, you know, I think the reason why this is so possible, like, hackbots worked a year ago, right? Expo or whatever, like, companies were able to do some stuff with it, but you had to have a bunch of like specialized wrappers, specialized prompts. And the reason for that was because the models were not that smart. You needed the internal monologue of experts or good reports in the context. You don't need that anymore because Claude Opus 4.6, even Sonnet 4.6, and I think Douglas Day's been using Haiku and finding bugs with it. He's found like 5 figures worth of bugs like in the last couple of weeks, and he's using like mostly Haiku. Is because they went in Cyberbench from like 30% to like 69% a pass rate. What this means is the models actually understand hacking better than they ever have before on this most recent release. And so anyways, people can be skeptical, people can be mad. I don't really care. I think that this is going to continue to impact our industry, and you have the opportunity to really like level up and make more money this year, or more bugs, and people should do it, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, GG, man. I think that's true. And I think, you know, just a moment ago, I sort of had that experience with Shift a while back, you know, and I got that $15,000 bounty. And every time I just recently had to go and refill my open router with credits, I was like, oh man, do I put another $200 on here? And I'm like, wait a second. This is already paid for itself time and time and time and time again, you know? So yeah, it's definitely worth it. All right. Let's call it a wrap then. Yeah.
Perfect. Yep. Peace, guys.
Peace. Good pod. And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time, trust me. All right, I'll see you there.